going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Hour number two of the Rob Brown Show goes now. It's the Fan Upstate. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, dudes and dudettes, amigos and amigas. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and you, as we are rolling through a Friday, gotta get down on Friday edition of the radio program.
I told my wife last night that you've already bought that jacket.
It's so dope. It's so dope. Travis Hunter was just on with
this. I don't get the strap thing across the, but still.
I don't either. But I'm past the age where fashion is a thing for me. I have two options. One, I go classic traditional looks, or two, I just outright and openly steal what the youth are doing and try to still be cool. I don't know what the little extra strap across Travis Hunter's neon pink jacket was last night. I am going to say I absolutely want that. If I find that jacket, I was going to say I'm buying that jacket, but let's be real. Yeah, I don't have first-round draft pick money.
I was going to say, that particular jacket's probably like your salary for 1 year. But
correct.
Still.
Now, if I find a jacket that looks like that jacket, I'm absolutely buying it. If I find a hot pink jacket somewhere that resembles that jacket, I will own that jacket.
That's like highlighter pink. It really glowed. So, I mean, finding that exact color would probably be difficult. I don't know.
Probably. It's not going to stop me from trying. If I find a hot pink jacket like T-Rav had on last night, I'm going to buy it, and you will know because I will be wearing it on the show the next morning. I will come in here stunting the next morning if I can find a, I'm pretty sure it broke my television monitor, pink jacket. Good luck. Good luck.
By the way, that was a sweet looking. I'm not making fun of it. I mean,
no, I'm not.
I was like, oh,
yeah, that's a good look. I like being loud. What do you want? It's a good look. All right, we are obviously talking about the first round of the National Football League draft from last night. I'm going to go ahead and guess that's going to be a water cooler cheat sheet item here in just a couple of minutes from right now. I say guess. I wrote it. So I definitely am going to say it is. We're going to get to that here in just a minute. After that, we'll talk about the NFC South's draft picks from last night because it's the shorter segment, final segment of the hour. It is the long segment of the hour. We'll talk about Carolina's draft pick and how he fits in Tet McMillan or not. T-Mac, as he, you know what? My man said, I don't like Tet. Cool with me. T-Mac it is. So we got XL, T-Mac, and Jalen Coker.
Yeah, he went heritage. When you go heritage, you got
to. I respect it. Yeah. Even if it wasn't. Even if it was just, I don't like that nickname. Nicknames are assigned, not requested. All right? You earn a nickname. You are given a nickname. It is not one that you can go, this is my nickname. If anybody ever says, this is my nickname, you're not calling them that. But Dude straight up said, I do not like Tet. All right, cool. I respect the request. T-Mac it is. So we'll talk about the draft pick for the Panthers later on in the show and more. But it is the start of the 7 o'clock hour. 7:04 in the a.m. if you're paying attention to the clock. If you're not paying attention to the clock, well, you got slightly more than 55 minutes to get into the office, to get that first couple of hours grinded away, and then to take that first break, walk down the hallway, go stand in the corner where the boss can't really see you, go pull George out of shipping. George, we got to talk some football, some basketball, some baseball, some soccer, some hockey, whatever you like to talk about. When you and George get together to talk sports, you got to know what's going on in the world of sports, because George does. You know why? Because George listens to the Water Cooler Cheat Sheet. Water Cooler Cheat Sheet, top three sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports this morning. When you do, this is what you'll be talking about. Let's dive head first into item number one. The National Football League draft got kicked off last night. Round number one, 32 teams got an opportunity to pick. Less than 32 did, because we had a couple of trades, ups and downs. Cam Ward, University of Miami, quarterback, number one overall selection, went to the Tennessee Titans. Colorado's Travis Hunter went number two, but it was not to the Cleveland Browns. They actually had a trade with the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jags sent this and next year's first round pick over to Cleveland in order to pick up Travis Hunter. The two-way superstar from Colorado joins T-Law and the Jags. Abdul Carter, third to the Giants. The Pennsylvania State University edge rusher, Will Campbell, the LSU offensive lineman. By the way, there were like four or five of my favorite completely non-football-related draft moments. The world being introduced to Will Campbell out of LSU was my favorite part. That, first off, and I'm not making fun of the kid, because the like, my dude was crying on stage. He's like, This is what I worked for. It was a great moment. I just love that Baston, Fenway Pack, take the cat down to Baston Gadden, is getting Will Campbell, the offensive tackle out of LSU. Y'all, he's going to fit right in. I cannot wait to see that dude.
Will he be hanging at Vrabel's house? Probably.
Apparently, this story came out during the draft last night. Apparently during workouts, when the Patriots were working out Will Campbell, apparently Vrabel wanted to put a pass rush to get up close and personal with Campbell's technique. And apparently Will Campbell put Mike Vrabel's ass in the dirt, like straight up pancaked his future head coach. And the story was, we don't know if that was the moment that Mike Vrabel went, that's my guy. But it would make perfect sense that Will Campbell pancaked the head coach of the Patriots and Vrabel went, yep. Yep.
I love that story.
Yep.
That's such a great story.
Yep. That's my guy.
And we believe it.
Oh, I elect to believe it.
Yeah.
100% it happened. My brain and my fanfic, it 100% happened. Mason Graham, the DT from the Michigan Wolverines, went to the Cleveland Browns, who dropped back to number five. Running back, Boise State, Ashton Janty, 6'2", the Raiders, as expected. Armon Membu, I think the best offensive lineman in this class, went seventh to the New York Football Jets. I got to tell you, a lot of people gave them grief last night. Go look at the Jets' offensive line. It's good. Remember, they got Olufoshanu last year. They got two of the better young tackles in the league. Tetraroa McMillan, the wide receiver out of Arizona, ends up eighth overall to the Carolina Panthers. We're going to talk about him and that selection later on in the hour. Kelvin Banks Jr., the offensive lineman from Texas, ninth to the New Orleans Saints. The Chicago Bears went with Colston Loveland, making him the highest picked tight end in the draft. Ended up jumping over Tyler Warren, who fell 14th to the Colts. Michael Williams from Georgia went to the 49ers. Tyler Booker, the offensive lineman from Alabama, went to the Cowboys. Kenneth Grant, defensive tackle from Michigan, 13th to the Dolphins. And Jalen Walker, who I thought was going to be off the board no later than 8th to the Cats, falls all the way down to number 15 to the Atlanta Falcons. That's how it shaped up. There were some other big moves. The New York Giants traded up to 25 to get Jackson Dart. The very next pick, the Falcons traded back into the first round to get James Pierce Jr., the edge rusher out of the University of Tennessee. Shedeur Sanders not selected in the first round. A lot more first round draft coverage coming up as the show continues, but we've got to get to item number two. Three NBA playoff games taking place last night. The New York Knicks now lead the series over the Detroit Pistons 2-1 after a 118-116 win over D-Town last night. Big Cat Karl-Anthony Towns led the Knicks last night with 31. Jalen Brunson pitched in 30 on 9 of 20 from the floor. 22 for Anunoby, 20 for Mikal Bridges. Nobody else on the team had more than 6 points, but that was all the Knicks needed to squeak by Detroit. It was a wild basketball game. These two teams were getting into it. We were borderline malice at the palace for just a minute there. For the Pistons, 24 for Cade Cunningham and Tim Hardaway Jr. Dennis Schroeder had 18 off the bench, 12 for Malik Beasley, 16 for Jalen Duren. Not enough as the Pistons fall into a 2-1 hole. The Thunder have the largest playoff come-from-behind victory in NBA history. They were down as many as 29 in the game last night to the Memphis Grizzlies. But once Ja Morant left the game with a nasty fall, he left the arena on crutches last night. We do not yet have an update. Expect one later on in the day. It's not going to matter if Ja comes back or not, because the Grizz in an 0-3 hole and have shown nothing. They had a 29-point lead and could not hold it last night. Shea gave you 31-26 from Jalen Williams. Chet Holmgren had 24. A pair of bench players, Alex Caruso and Isaiah Joe, each had a dime in this game for the Grizz last night. Jaren Jackson Jr. had 22. Scottie Pippen Jr. had 28. Ja had just 16 minutes, 15 points before he left this game. 3-0 lead for the Thunder over the Grizz. And then last night, I don't know what the hell this was. This was the most competitive series in the opening round, but the Clippers decimated the Nuggets last night, 117-83. They had four starters with 19 or more. Zubac had 19. Harden and Powell had 20. Kawhi had 21 for the Clips last night. The Nuggets shot 40% from the floor, 7 of just 26 threes from range. Nikola Jokic had 23, 13 boards and 13 assists, another triple-double effort. Jamal Murray had 23 points, but only 4 assists, no boards, and just 1 steal last night. 15 for Aaron Gordon. Nobody else on the team had more than 9. In fact, there were only, I believe, 4 or 5 other players that scored points. Brown had 9, 7 from Porter. You had off the bench 3 from Russell Westbrook, 2 from Peyton Watson, and Najee had 1 point. Nobody else scored for that. That was embarrassing. That was embarrassing. Nikola Jokic was on the sideline. I don't know if you got to see this. Jokic was on the sideline imploding. He was the head coach last night. Dude had the whiteboard. He was in people's faces last night. The Nuggets found nothing. They now find themselves in a 2-1 hole. Let's get to item number 3. So, the House settlement is expected now in 13 days. Effectively, the judge in the case, Claudia Wilkin, told the NCAA, your roster limitation agreement, I'm not good with that. Everything else in the agreement, I'm good with. But asking teams to cut their roster sizes down immediately and right now, I'm not good with. Because effectively, you're going to have a bunch of kids on scholarship who are going to be told you don't play here anymore and you have not provided them with an opportunity to play anywhere else. Basically, she said, you're taking a bunch of spots away from kids and then with the same regulation saying, but OBTWs, you can't go play anywhere else. Like, you're just done. Claudia Wilkins said, that's not good enough. Back to the drawing board and figure that out. So we are probably now 14 days away. Basically, and this is not the water cooler cheat sheet item. It's setting up the item. I'm coming to that. But basically, Claudia Wilkins told the NCAA, you have 14 days from yesterday. You have 14 days to figure this out, to get an agreement in place about roster size limitation that the plaintiff or the defendants are good with, excuse me, the plaintiffs are good with in this case. And if you do not do that, this house settlement is going to trial. And it is widely assumed by those in the know who have been following this story that if the NCAA goes to trial, they are going to lose every single aspect of this case. They have got to get it done. Now, it is expected that they will. And it is expected that within the next 13 days, if not 13 days from now, the house settlement will be reached. And of course, that leads to revenue sharing between the schools and the players. NIL will shift to a revenue sharing model. That is to say, the schools will take X percent of their profit up to, I believe, $22 million a year and will distribute it amongst scholar athletes. How about this story out of the University of Kentucky? Yesterday, Kentucky announced that today they will ask their board of trustees to approve a plan that will convert the entire University of Kentucky athletic department to an LLC, a limited liability company, a move the school says will position it to adapt to the new climate of collegiate sports. The name of the school's proposed limited liability company would be, quote, Champions Blue. And if it is established, Kentucky proponents say it would allow them to create a public-private partnership and raise funds and handle expenses as collegiate sports shift into their new era, assuming the house settlement is approved and schools are allowed to revenue share with athletes in the years ahead. That according to a statement from the school. A board composed of business and professional sports experts will advise athletic director Mitch Barnhart and school president Eli Capiluto under the proposed model, which the school is calling one of the first in Division I sports. Capiluto said, quote, we believe this is an innovative approach, a new structure and governance model that thoughtfully contemplates how we strengthen athletics, protect and promote the university, and open up new opportunities for growth. It's a foundation and model that we are calling Champions Blue. Athletics and its success have always been the result of an incredible and productive partnership with campus. It will continue to be in the future if we seize the opportunities in front of us to meet the challenges that lie ahead. Lonzo, for years, has been saying, we call or should call the athletes employees if this is the model that we are undergoing. If Kentucky gets its way, if Kentucky gets its way, an athletic department becomes an LLC, you know, a company or a business. At that point, I think we would have to say employees are now athletes are now employees. They are also students, but now they are no longer student athletes. They are now student athlete employees. They would almost have to be certified that way, but that's what the house settlement sets up. No one else so far, at least not at the power level, has done this. I would not be shocked to see schools following suit. We will deep dive this a little later in the show, but when we come back, let's take a look at the biggest moves from last night's draft. The biggest picks, the biggest trades, what the teams in the NFC South that are direct rivals of the Panthers did. In the final segment of this show, we'll take a look at the Panthers' number 8 overall selection of T-Mac, Tejeroa McMillan out of Arizona, how he fits into the franchise, etc. In the third hour of the show, we're going to get into everything we have not gotten about because we're talking NFL draft. It's Alonzo, it's Rob, it's you, it's the Rob Brown Show. It is the Fan Upstate. Join us on our live stream, Facebook.com/TheFanUpstate, The Fan Upstate on YouTube, The Fan Upstate on Twitter, The Rob Brown Show on Facebook, on YouTube, and on Twitch. Search, subscribe, and put us on whatever screen you happen to be around. You can watch it on your phone. You can watch it on your smart TV. You can watch it on your computer at work. Tell IT you want a second monitor. Tell them it'll make you a more productive employee. And then use that second monitor to join Lonzo and I every single morning for all 4 hours of the radio program on our live stream. So let's talk about some of the biggest moves and shakes that took place last night in the first round of the NFL draft. We talked a little bit about it back in the first hour of the show, so we won't spend a time on it. But the first big thing we saw last night, Cam Ward off the board at number one. We all saw that one coming. That was almost a guarantee going into last night. The Jacksonville Jaguars take a big swing. They decide to trade up with the Cleveland Browns. They jump up from number 5 to number 2 to bring Travis Hunter. James Gladstone, their GM, said this. This is it for me.
Got him in the boat.
Got him in the boat, baby. Travis Hunter is a boomer bust player, right? Like, I guess there is a world where Travis Hunter's a pretty good wide receiver. But it feels to me like Travis Hunter is either going to be everything that the Travis Hunter proponents say he's going to be, or he's going to be everything that the Travis Hunter haters say he's going to be. The proponents say he's going to be one of the best football. He's modern-day Deion. He's going to play both ways. He's got an opportunity to be a Pro Bowl on both sides of the football, whatever. And then the Travis Hunter haters are going to say, he played for Colorado. He had great numbers because the offense was effectively set up to be Travis to Shador, Shador to Travis, nothing else. And look at the record of the Buffaloes. Winning record in a ball game. One in whatever it is against Pac-12 opponents, right? They beat up on the low-level teams they played. They did not beat up on the high-level teams they played. He's overrated. I lean towards, honestly, I think Travis Hunter is going to be a pretty damn good NFL player. But that audio clip from new general manager of the Jacksonville Jaguars, James Gladstone, when I say young cat, what is he, 32, I believe, their new general manager? I think 3 or 4 years from now, that clip is going to be one of two things. That clip is either going to be a clip where the Jags, with their multi-time Pro Bowler Trevor Lawrence, are going to say that was the moment that James Gladstone made this team, or they're going to look and they're going to go, that was the moment where James Gladstone tanked us for another 5 years and gave away 2 first-rounders and a couple of mid-rounders to go get a very average football player. We'll find out. I don't have an issue with the move. I don't. This is the year that Trevor Lawrence makes or breaks as a Jaguars quarterback. So go get the best weapon in the draft. And to me, Travis Hunter was the best wide receiver in this class. Travis Hunter was the best wide receiver in this class. You went and you got the best playmaker in this class. We're going to find out. I'm not mad at it for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Abdul Carter III to the New York Football Giants, who would then trade back into the first round. The Giants would go back on the clock at number 25 and grab Jackson Dart, the quarterback out of Ole Miss. Was texting back and forth with token New York Giants fan buddy of the show, Chris Lewis, last night. And the conversation was basically an extension of what I said on the air yesterday, when we were having the Jackson Dart v. Shador Sanders discussion. The conversation was, if Jackson Dart reaches full potential, Jackson Dart will be a better NFL quarterback than if Shador Sanders reaches his full NFL potential. However, if Jackson Dart does not reach his full potential, Jackson Dart could be a worse NFL quarterback than Shador Sanders if Shador does not reach his full potential. Jackson Dart can be a better, good NFL quarterback than Shador Sanders, but he could also be a worse, bad NFL quarterback than Shador Sanders. And we're just going to have to wait to see which one he's developed into. I don't have an issue with the pick. I did not have an issue, and I did say this yesterday on the show, I did not have an issue with the folks who had Jackson Dart above Shador Sanders on their draft board. I think it is a higher risk, higher reward scenario. I think with the athleticism of Shedeur Sanders, you can utilize his legs to simplify the offense around him and give him a better chance to play longer. With Jaxson Dart, who is a mobile quarterback, let's not pretend he's not, but with Jaxson Dart, his arm's going to be the determining factor. If he gets it, I think the dude can be great. If he doesn't get it, it's going to be a bust. I like what the Giants did here. I like that they did not take a huge swing to get him at number three. They got the best, in my opinion, best player on the draft board in Abdul Carter. They added him to an already very good front seven with Brian Burns and Kayvon Thibodeau on it. I think the Giants had a good first round. I like that move. I like the pick at three. I like the trade up to 25. Will Campbell to LSU felt like a gimme. Cleveland going Mason Graham at five. I'm actually good with it. And there was one question that I asked coming into this draft. It's something we talked about dating back to the day after the Philadelphia Eagles won the Super Bowl. Will we see a Howie Roseman impact? Will we see a shift in NFL draft philosophy because of Howie Roseman, individually Howie Roseman? Will we see teams start to add emphasis on drafting from the middle out? Get young, big, powerful, explosive linemen, and then add talent elsewhere via free agency and getting veteran players? Well, let's look at that, shall we? Pick number three was an edge rusher. Number four was an offensive tackle. Number five was a defensive tackle. Number seven, an offensive tackle. Number nine, an offensive tackle. 10, a tight end. 11, an edge rusher. 12, an offensive guard. 13, a defensive tackle. 14, a tight end. 16, a defensive tackle. 17, an edge rusher. 18, a guard. Defensive tackle at 21. Offensive guard at 24. Edge rusher at 26. Defensive tackle at 28. Offensive tackle at 29. And offensive tackle at 32. I didn't keep up with how many that was, but it's at least half of the first round was edge, defensive tackle, offensive lineman.
Some people could look at this and go, well, that just shows you there's not enough receivers and quarterbacks and all those kind of guys. So they decided to go the other way and get it's not a real heavy draft on the other kind of players. It is for offensive and defensive linemen.
I think that is absolutely part of it. And again, my take yesterday on this class was, I think you've got a handful of blue chip prospects, if I can use that term. I don't know if Cam Ward was one. I think Travis Hunter was one. I think Abdul Carter was one. I think Will Campbell was one. I think Ashton Janti was one. I think Armand Membu was one. And outside of that, maybe Tyler Warren was one at tight end. Maybe Tyler Warren was one. I thought this year was a class that has a very shallow top-tier pool and a very deep B-tier pool, second group guys. Guys that, you know, in a lot of years we would say were guys that you start looking at 14 moving back. This year I think you had to start looking at them at like 6, 7 and moving back. I thought it was very deep at regular guys. I think it's a very good offensive and defensive line class. I also think, and again, of course I'm going to because I'm me, but I also do think I called the shot, which is you're going to see an added emphasis on drafting linemen from now on. Like moving forward, I think Howie Roseman by himself as a general manager for Philly, by winning this year's Super Bowl, by going for 2-2 out of the last three and having only Mahomes stand between him in winning two of the last three Super Bowls, I think you're going to see an added emphasis on drafting linemen moving forward, and I think it started last night. Mason Graham to Cleveland, I honestly don't have a problem with it. I think Mason Graham was the best interior defensive lineman in this draft. And if you're going to start, if you are Cleveland, if you are going to start trying to rebuild this franchise, do it the Roseman way by drafting inside out. And that's what they did. Janty at 6, Membo at 7, no shocks there. Tet McMillan at 8 to the Panthers. We're going to talk about him coming up in the next segment. Kelvin Banks Jr., the offensive tackle from Texas. I popped off last night. I'm not going to lie. I may have knee-jerk reactioned a little bit last night. The Saints were convicted in this pick. The Saints were convicted. They had their pick in before Tet McMillan had his Carolina Panther hat on. That pick was in. They were convicted. They think he's the best guy. Really good offensive lineman out of Texas, which is known for having big, real offensive linemen out there. Corn-fed, beef-fed boys. Was that the right pick? I don't know. But I'm going to give Kellen Moore the benefit of the doubt. It's year number one. He has not coached the game as a head coach. I'm going to give him a shot. We'll find out. We'll talk some more about some of the big moves when we come back. Speaking of, Kevin, my dog Kev hanging on the line. Kevin, you are first up coming out of the break. Don't go anywhere. We'll talk about T-Mac and the rest of the Carolina Panthers' upcoming moves when we come back on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate. With the number 8 selection in the 2025 National Football League draft, the Carolina Panthers select Teteroa McMillan, wide receiver from Arizona. Let's talk a little bit about the kid. Let's talk a little bit about where he fits in, and we will right after we talk to Kevin. Going ham at 7:39 a.m. Kev, welcome back to the show, big fella. How we doing?
Oh, man, I'm doing great,
man. I'm glad to hear it.
Listen, for all these, for half of this draft last night to be linemen, that just makes me happy. Like, I'm smiling ear to ear now for them boys, man. But to start from the inside, that other team know we got what we want. We just need to get these boys beefed up front so we can – we got a running back because you got your running back that's okay running back. They can run, hit the holes, go where they need to go. Then you got your superstars that do what they do. But I feel like some of these teams got what they need. They just need some linemen, man, that'll be able to hold this up. Because playoff time comes, that's when them linemen make their money, man.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. And again, like my theory, post the Eagles winning the Super Bowl and the realization, like they are – it's a very interesting team because for a team that's gone to two of the last three, won one of those, like the Eagles just after this Super Bowl win, beating Mahomes, dominating the Chiefs, just started getting talked about as a model franchise, right? Like a franchise that you look and you go, how do we steal what they're doing? How do we emulate what they are doing? And my theory, Kev, I don't know how much you've heard me say it, if at all, but my theory coming into this draft was, I think you're going to see teams start to emulate the Eagles methodology or the Howie Roseman methodology of, if we're going to draft, let's draft beef. Let's draft dudes up front, offensive line, defensive line, and then we'll go find the A.J. Browns. We'll go get the Gardner Johnsons for defensive back. We'll go find vets that we know we can plug and play. Let's get beef and develop linemen into our system from the beginning. Because I'll tell you, like as a Saints fan, we've drafted a bunch of linemen over the years, but it's been one-off guys, right? We'll get a first-round tackle and then just nothing else across the line after that. And so we've got like a hodgepodge, whereas the Eagles bring in two or three of these guys a year, and there's always that core. I think we saw that last night as an NFL philosophy, not a team philosophy, as the NFL starting to go, maybe Howie Roseman's on to something here.
Yeah, listen, man, you got to start in there because you got a quarterback. But he always on his back. We ain't getting nowhere. We are not getting anywhere. We got to, every time he dropped back, he got people in his face every time. Now we got to fix that. So beefing it up, and then and you know, like I said, Philly started this thing with the D line they got, and how they won that Super Bowl with just the D line. Like you got to start finding, you got to start biting some of that and getting some of that on these other NFL teams, man. Because if not, you're gonna keep blitzing. These good quarterbacks gonna pick you apart. But when I can get four to you, and I can sit back. Oh, man, like, you made that coach's job like he's been doing this all his life, and it's just like his second hand to him.
Yeah, I mean, listen, if you give your quarterback time to throw and you don't give theirs time to throw, you're going to win more games than you lose. And again, like, you can look at any of the teams, Kev, that have been consistently successful. You look at Kansas City. The two Super Bowls Kansas City has lost under Mahomes, both of them, and I think Lonzo would agree with this, have been because the offensive line was either injured, blown up, or just not good enough. When I look at the Eagles, 2 years ago, when they lost the Super Bowl, that was the year that the Chiefs had a damn good offensive and defensive line, and theirs was dinged up. This year, both sides of the line very healthy. The Eagles dominate the Chiefs. And any of the other teams, like I look at the Buffalo Bills. They got Josh Allen should have a Lombardi, maybe two. But the reason, the reason Allen doesn't is because Josh Allen's running for his life as much as he's got time to sit back there and be a playmaker. This is why I've been looking at the Bills going, get some damn linemen out front of this cat and watch what happens.
I said that a lot about Buffalo, man, because in the playoffs, all this five wide making your quarterback be the best, that's not going to work. Somebody's got to run that ball, and somebody's got to run this clock out if we up 10 to 14 in the fourth quarter. They can't do it, and they're not going to go until they do it.
Yeah, that's it. Kevin, great call, brother. Good to talk to you. Appreciate you checking in. There are some elements of football that are very simple. It was Kellen Moore. It was the Saints' new head coach a couple of days ago when they were talking about what the Saints are going to do with their pick at number 9. And Kellen Moore said, and I'm paraphrasing, but I'm very close. Kellen Moore said, the end of the day, you got to block, you got to run, you got to tackle, you got to be very good at the line of scrimmage. Some things about football just aren't very complicated. And this is one of them. You got to block, you got to run, you got to tackle. Like, at the core of football are those three concepts. You can complicate it as much as you want after that. You can have an Andy Reid caliber playbook where it's just absolute chaos and shenanigans everywhere. But at the end of the day, the Kansas City Chiefs have been very good at blocking, running, and tackling. Well, if you got those three things down, you got a very good chance of being a very good football team. And that's why I've said, I think the Roseman philosophy is about to become the NFL philosophy, and it's probably going to be that way for a while. All right, let's talk about Teteroa McMillan, the first-round pick of the Carolina Panthers last night coming in from Arizona. I am okay. I'm okay with the pick. I don't love it. There's a lot to like about McMillan.
So I guess, again, I'm just anti you. I was very excited about this pick. And even when we were talking to Rashad, we were talking about getting another receiver to be opposite of Xavier Leggett. And even, I don't know if it was last week, you mentioned this guy's name. It's the first time I ever heard of him. You were talking about him favorably.
I like Tet McMillan.
Yeah, so I...
Sorry, T-Mac.
So I am pretty excited about this because they have other draft picks and they got time to take care of the defense. So let me ask you this question. So if this was the only offensive pick that they make and they go defense the rest of the way, and we've talked about how deep this draft is with defensive players, then was it a bad pick? Is it only a bad pick because... you think and others think they should have went defense first?
Let me start with, I'm not saying it's a bad pick. I'm saying I don't love it, right? I'm not saying it's a bad pick. I'm saying I don't love it. Part of the reason is who they passed on. Because Jalen Walker is a dude that I love. I think he's going to be a very good NFL player. And yes, the Panthers have a lot of need. The Panthers' biggest need to me was the ability to get to the quarterback. They just have not been able to do that. And yes, they've been banged up by injuries. Not having Derrick Brown as your stalwart in the middle was a big pain, no doubt about
it. But he's going to be back.
He is going to be back. But he's also a defensive tackle and a run stuffer, not a pass rusher. The reason that it's a bad deal is because without Derrick Brown in the middle, offensive lines have been free to scheme a little bit more against the Panther pass rush elsewhere. With Derrick Brown in there, that's a must double team.
Panthers have 8 more picks.
Again.
So 8 more picks. If they go defense with all 8 picks, will it make this pick feel better?
No. It will not, because you're not picking Jalen Walker with any more of those 8 picks. Like, this is a, I will acknowledge, this is a spot to me where my I do not dislike the pick. Can I start with that? I try to make my position a little
more clear. Okay, because the fact that you have to keep clarifying means even while you're saying it, you think maybe it comes across that way.
Let me put it into, let me do as we always do and put it into a food analogy. This pick was vanilla ice cream when Rocky Road was available. Or insert your favorite ice cream flavor here. Mint chocolate chip.
Rocky Road's pretty good.
Rocky Road's yes. If I go over to someone's house and they go, here you go, Rob, big old bowl of vanilla ice cream with chocolate syrup on top. I'm going to go, sweet. I like this. But if I go to somebody's house and they go, here you go, Rob, here is a big old bowl of homemade, churned Rocky Road with fresh chocolate chips ice cream, I'm going to go.
It's not churned. You got to do the dial thing. Churning is butter.
Is this not churning, though?
No.
When it's still, I mean, churning, I don't think the act is churning, or I don't think the motion is the churn. I think it's what's happening. I think
No. Ice cream is cranking.
Lonzo loves to go home and crank his ice cream.
And butter is churning.
Okay. Whatever you do to ice cream, if somebody says, here's some home whatever it is, Rocky Road, I'm going to be more excited about that than I am if they hand me a bowl of vanilla with chocolate syrup. I like vanilla with chocolate syrup. That's fine. But it ain't Rocky Road. Rocky Road was on the table and you handed me a bowl of vanilla. I'm not ungrateful. I like it. It just ain't what I wanted. Okay? And I will acknowledge that this is just my subjective here. For a team that struggles defensively, yeah, you get Derek Brown back, but you're talking to me about a defensive tackle. It's good run stuff. You're going to be better against the run, no doubt. I needed somebody who was going to decrease the average amount of time a quarterback has to throw against the Panthers' defensive backfield, and that to me was Jalen Walker. This dude is a versatile, explosive edge rusher. I can line him up as a DN, as an outside backer, as an inside backer in a 3-4. He's a utility guy that I thought was a chef's kiss of a fit for the Panthers defense.
Okay, Teroa, is he the number one receiver now on the Panthers?
Yes.
Okay, so you got a number one receiver.
Yes.
And you've got eight more picks to find defensive get in there to help.
He's the number one wide receiver. Doesn't mean he's a guy that I'm going, that was worth the number eight pick. I don't think he's there yet. Like, he's not an explosive wide receiver. You already have.
But we don't know that Travis Hunter is going to translate to the NFL.
I don't disagree. But if you put those two guys on film next to each other, Travis Hunter's better. True. He's just better.
True, right? In college, for sure.
So, with that being said, the concerns I have about Tet, he's not wildly explosive. He's a jump ball guy. And I will acknowledge, the one thing I do love about him, he turns 50-50 balls into 70-30 balls. If it's a jump ball with T-Mac, because he asked not for Tet, and I'll respect his wishes.
It's definitely going to be a ball ascending. I'm just saying.
Can't escape, even when we're not talking about him. If you throw a jump ball to T-Mac, he turns 50-50 balls into 70-30 balls. For me, that's actually good for Bryce Young. It is, because it means that BY can have a little more trust in the old bleep it T-Max down there somewhere offense. And sometimes that's a good thing even for a great NFL quarterback, the ability to go, I don't have any guys that I really like open down there, so I'm going to go to the guy that I can throw it. It's like Calvin Johnson. I don't really need him to be open. I need him to be in a favorable matchup. And if Dave Canales can scheme T-Mac into getting one-on-one with a bunch of 5'11 corners, that's value. But he doesn't explode out of breaks. He doesn't explode off the ball. He is, to me, subjectively speaking, he is, to me, a very good number two receiver. And to me, I don't want to spend the eighth overall pick on a number two receiver when I have to pass a guy like Jalen Walker, who I think is a guy I would grade as a top five pick in a lot of NFL drafts, in order to get him. I don't think outside of Travis Hunter, there's a wide receiver in this draft that I would have selected above 14, 15. And that includes for the Panthers at 8. I may be wrong. I hope I am. I hope a year from now, when we're going to the next class, I go, I'm not going to say a damn word about what the Panthers should do in the draft because I was not a big fan. I'm not a fan. I'm just not a big fan of the Tet pick. And would you look at that? T-Mac turns out to be a dog. My bad, Daniel Morgan. That's on me.
I mean, we may actually have the opportunity to interview this,
here's
this
hoping. Kid. And, it won't be in training camp.
That's for sure. But he's going to find out that you kept calling him the name that he doesn't want to be called and
listen,
hey, you know what? I was going to, yeah, but no.
Okay, in fairness, we have spent 4 months referring to him as Tet, and I found out last night that he doesn't like that. Okay? Last night I found that out. So it's going to take me a minute. I still call him the San Diego Chargers. It's going to take me a minute. But with that being said, not an explosive accelerator. Is a good comeback against the zone guy. Man against the man defense. Good hands to separate. Good jump ball guy. Not a guy that I feel like you can throw a ton of expectant balls into man-to-man coverage. He's going to be covered up a bit. It's going to take some time to get out of that. I like T-Mac as a pick here. I do not love it. I honestly, if you wanted T-Mac, that's where that trade back would have come in for me. I would have traded back for eight. If you wanted T-Mac, I think it. Now, maybe the offer just never came in that you're like, okay, that's worth it to move out of this spot. Like, you got a value on T-Mac. You got a value on what you were looking for to trade back. Maybe they didn't. But we do know Dan Morgan was fielding calls, or he's lying. Right, he said last night, we were fielding calls. We didn't get an offer that we thought was worth moving off of the player that we liked at number eight. All right, I'm going to trust Dan Morgan here. I'm going to say, it's your team. I'm going to trust you on this. I liked Jalen Walker more than I liked T-Mac at this spot. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he turns out to be a dude. A lot of people popping off last night saying, this guy's underappreciated. He's going to be better than you think he's going to be. I hope they're right. I really wanted Jalen Walker or a trade back and go get T-Mac at 12, 13, 14 if you got that call. Maybe they didn't get that call. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. We'll find out. And we'll talk more about this later on the show. Steven said, Zoe, it is churning ice cream. FYI, the machine is literally called an ice cream churn.
All right. I looked it up and you can do it either way.
And what's the other way?
Cranking it. So, Rob,
we just got Lonzo to say Rob, cranking it on
yeah,
the air.
Yeah. When I get in the car, I turn on my music and I crank it. I'm curious, have you ever seen, when you think churning, do you think up and down or do you think rotate?
I mean, like the default action is up and down.
Right. And so when I'm looking up churning ice cream, it's a rotating. It's not up and down. My understanding of churning has always been up and down. So, you know.
Lonzo
since you can call it both. You know what you should do? You should turn on this station. Well, if you're only watching on the stream, and crank it. That's what you should do.
Sports Flash.
So immature, I swear. A three-game series against NC State started with a 14-4 loss for the number 2 Clemson baseball team. Aiden Knack was tagged for 11 hits and 8 earned runs across 4 innings. Clemson hitters recorded 7 hits but left 8 runners on base while the Wolfpack racked up 19 hits and a dozen RBIs. The Greenville Drive struck back last night, taking Game 3 of the series against the Hub City Spartanburgers 6-3. Drive starter Hayden Mullins surrendered just 1 hit through the first 4 innings, including retiring 12 straight Spartanburger batters. Trio of NBA playoff games last night. The Knicks won a close contest against the Pistons, 118-116. The Thunder put down the Grizzlies, 114-108, and completed the largest comeback in NBA history. And finally, the Clippers dominated the Nuggets, 117-83. Kawhi Leonard had 21, and James Harden had 20 for the Clippers. Hour number 3 of the Rob Brown Show coming up.